The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
Did you know that 30% of global agricultural production depends on pollination?
Interesting. So that's where pollen grains are transferred from male to female parts of the flower to produce fruits and vegetables, right?
Yeah. I feel you digging into like your high school biology.
I believe that there are some sectors that the only way pollination can happen is by hand.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm thinking about greenhouses. I'm thinking about countries where you can't imagine vast fields where bees are available to pollinate. And in fact, there's been a big problem with bee populations in the world. Mm. Anyway, all of this can make operations expensive, inefficient, and none of us were born to pollinate, were we?
Have you seen the size of my hands? Well, Singapore-based Polybee noticed this gap, and they're looking to make things easier and better for farmers by using drones to do this job.
I am absolutely fascinated by what we're about to talk about. So Polybee is currently developing its own palm-sized drone that can create a signature-controlled airflow, I've got to figure out what that means, pattern to vibrate the flowers at the right frequency so that they release their pollen. This is brilliant.
So it's no longer agriculture. You know? What these guys are in, it's an agri-tech industry.
Totally.
We're going to have a chat with their founder and CEO of Polybee, Siddharth Jadhav, who's in the studio with us. Siddharth, good morning and welcome.
Thank you so much, Elliot. Happy to be here.
So are you a guy that you've got all these palm-sized drones and you're like the lord of the drones and they all just go into the greenhouse? And that your imagination?
You can think of the Black Mirror episode, which is what we often get referred to. But no, we are not that diabolical. essentially, I'll just give you a quick overview. So Polybee is on a mission to increase productivity in agriculture through automation. And the first problem that we're tackling is pollination, rightly, because you said. So, you know, there's a third of the global production which depends on it. The anomaly that we have noticed is that there's so many sectors which are entirely dependent on manual pollination. Some of these sectors include seed production, for instance, right? Seed industry is a $50 billion industry. Majority of the food that we eat today comes from hybrid seeds. And as the name suggests, hybrid, it's a cross between two different varieties of crops, which have certain traits which are favorable, you know, in fact, strategic to food security. For instance, you know, you can think of seedless watermelons, which have been bred over generations, right? Or certain crops which have certain disease or climate resistance. That is something that you achieve through breeding. Now, to produce these hybrid seeds, you have to cross-pollinate two different varieties, which means you need a control on that process of pollination. Okay. The pollen has to grow from variety A to variety B.
Right.
Bees are wild animals. They're not going to obey our command when they ask us to do that, when we ask them to do that. So that's exactly why it's entirely dependent on manual pollination, and that is what we are trying to change here with drones.
I still can't get my head around manual pollination. How does that work?
Right. So if you look at it's okay. So before we get there, what I'd like to highlight is that pollination is a very nuanced process. There's so much fragmentation. Different crops have different types of pollination.
Okay.
But if you look at cross pollination first, what happens here is let's look at the seed industry, right? What happens is seeds are manually collected by workers, thousands of workers from different parts of the world. Mm-mm. And these pollen grains are then transported to a different place where then they are actually used for pollination of the second variety, right? Because it's a cross between A and B. So that's exactly how it works out right now.
This is cross-border pollination.
Absolutely.
It's massive. Mm.
Yes. So, you know, as you rightly mentioned, we were not born to pollinate, and there's only so much we can expect when it comes to efficiency and also the fact that labor is increasingly scarce for these kind of jobs. So there's an urgent need to automate this process, and that's exactly why we decided to talk to seed companies, some of the biggest in the world. And the first question that we always get from them is, when can you deploy this pilot, and not how much it's going to cost us, and so on. So yeah, it's very evident that the problem is urgent and something has to be done about it, and that's exactly what Polybee is doing.
Very interesting, because in a way, I wouldn't call you a disruptor. You're meant to improve the lives. But very often with stories like that, you get these more traditional setups sort of resist them. But in your case, you're saying that they welcome the technology and they welcome the change ASAP.
Absolutely. So if you talk about the seed industry specifically, it is run mostly by a very few companies all over the world. And as such, it is upon them to embrace innovation, because if there's only so many suppliers for seeds, they have to be on their toes. And given the increasing pressure on enhancing food security, it is upon them to come up with new varieties which are more, let's say, you know, which have higher climate resistance or disease resistance or higher yields. And to be able to do that, hybrid seeds is the way to go. So it's actually, I think it's more of a market-driven approach for them to embrace innovation than anything else. It's just that urgent.
So which countries do you see embracing this?
So if you look at the seed industry, it's largely run by these multinational conglomerates. One other point to note is that seed production is always local. So for instance, whatever food is being consumed in Southeast Asia, all of those seeds will be produced in Southeast Asia. Something that is grown in, let's say, Europe would not be sold here in terms of seeds. So as such, production is global, but we are starting with our pilots in this region.
How long have you had your pilot underway now?
So it starts in January, actually.
In January.
Yeah, with seed companies.
I'd like to talk a little bit on the broad scope of the agri-tech industry. This is a very new word for me, and I think a lot of people are used to that traditional form. How prominent or how big is this agri-tech industry? Do you have any examples of how it's benefited farmers, how we as consumers are benefiting down the line? Could you share?
Right. So, okay, what I can share is something from the perspective of automation. So increasingly, what is the pattern is that labor is just a huge problem, not just in terms of performance, but also in terms of availability. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
If you look at the state of California, which produces probably the highest quantity of strawberry in the U.S., labor is so short that the government has changed regulations to get more seasonal workers from Mexico.
Okay.
Which is a massive, massive signal, right? If those kind of radical reforms are being done today to just get people to even, you know, pluck the berries out there.
There'd be a wall, you know.
Any chance to the pollination.
Yeah. So essentially, problem being that labor for harvesting is severely short. And that goes for a number of other things which are labor intensive.
Okay.
So where we see, you know, as an automation startup contributing to this industry is by taking over these laborious tasks and getting things done in the farm. You know, not just using drones to collect data, give insights and hope that it helps, but actually get things done in the farm. And that is what farmers want increasingly as we go along. So there's a number of companies which are working on automating other tasks such as spraying of herbicides, pesticides. There's a number of drone startups in China which automate spraying of pesticides. There's so many which are automating weeding now. And these startups are, you know, increasingly reaching economies of scale as we go along. So if you ask me, I think the most exciting trend right now in agri-tech is automation to get things done.
I want to understand how this actually works. Can you describe these drones and how they can pollinate?
Sure.
Because my head isn't getting around this yet.
So if you look at automation of pollination, what we have to first look at is what's the vertical stack of technology that we need to build first to make this happen.
Okay.
So our core thesis is that this can be done in a cost-effective way with only drones. That's our thesis. And to get these kind of drones to fly autonomously to pollinate, the major constraint here is the size of your drones. For example, I can't expect a DJI drone to go around and pollinate successfully.
Yeah.
So with the size come many other challenges with it. So number one is how do you get autonomous flight with small size drones? Because you have only so much computational capacity on board and you can have only so many sensors. So we're building computer vision systems which enable this to happen because that's the only sensor which can realistically give you that kind of accuracy on board, right? So we have these cameras and with the help of external cameras as well, which look at the drone, enable it to position itself very accurately so that it can find the flower and go pollinate it. Now, as for the exact process of pollination, again, what we have to appreciate here, it's really fragmented. But to keep things simple and short, what I'll say is three major categories of pollination in general. There's self-pollination, there is closed pollination, and there's cross-pollination. How we pollinate every crop depends on what its natural way of pollination is.
Right.
So for instance, what you mentioned at the start of the talk, which is, you know, we use this airflow, which, you know, basically vibrates the flowers and then pollinates them. That goes for self-pollinating crops, which includes, let's say, strawberries, tomatoes, pepper, eggplant, and so on. Right. So for these kind of crops, what we're doing is we've optimized the airflow surrounding the drone such that when a drone, let's say, hovers over a flower, the turbulence of this airflow vibrates the flowers, which in turn disperses the pollen.
Okay, there's tech involved in terms of your rotors for these drones as well. I would imagine parts inside are a lot smaller because I think we mentioned at the start that they're the size of your palm, am I right?
Yes, correct.
What does that play into in terms of cost?
Right. Okay. So if you look at the challenges in getting these drones to fly autonomously, a large part of that relies on how accurate your sensors are in terms of, you know, sensing the motion of the drones. Mm. So yes, that might be slightly on the high side, but still not as high as the alternatives, right? The alternative is a robotic arm.
Right.
So that is why, you know, our solution to use drones for pollination is driven by economics more than anything else. The bill of materials is just significantly lower than the other alternatives out there. Yeah. So that's for the cost. Now, if you had to look at, you know, self-pollination in general a bit more in detail, then what we have to see is we're actually doing this in a very bio-inspired fashion. Mm. Now, for example, if you look at how a bumblebee pollinates all these crops, is it finds these flowers, it settles down on them, and then it vibrates its muscle at certain frequencies, which is what ends up dislodging the pollen.
Yeah.
Now we replicate that through turbulence in the air of the drone.
Okay, right? I see.
So that's exactly what we've optimized for. And that's how we pollinate this class of crops, which is called self-pollinating crops. Now for cross-pollinating, that's not something that we're starting right off the bat with, but we're working on cross-pollination with the seed companies where, you know, as I said, we have to transfer pollen from A to B. And there also, you know, we have to iterate a lot. We have to figure out what's the best way to disperse this pollen. Should it just be, you know, should it just be a sort of a dry pollen dispersal method, or should it be sprayed? Now, these are the things that we learn through our pilots, and, you know, we'll get closer to answering the question, what's the optimal way to disperse pollen in cross-pollination?
The mechanical bee. These palm-sized drones, how long did they take to develop?
Okay, so our development is largely along both lines, hardware as well as software.
Okay.
Right? So what we're doing now, we're starting with certain assembled components with the hardware. We're not iterating with hardware fast because that's just a lot more intensive. So right now, our core focus is on getting the software to pace and making sure that the drones are capable of this level of accuracy, of this level of precision.
Yeah.
And that's what our work is focused on largely in computer vision. Right now, which enables this automation. Going forward, we'll also be iterating the hardware platform because, you know, we're starting with an assumption that this is a good start, but as we learn through our pilots, we'll recognize, okay, there's certain things that we can make better about the platform. For instance, you know, we need a more accurate inertial sensor, or we can use a different camera, or we can change the size of the drone as well.
Mm.
So these are the things that we'll iterate through in our pilots.
Also, still a lot of trial and error to go through.
Right. So I think if you look at, you know, such a complex problem, that's our best bet. We have to iterate fast, and that is what will get us to a point where we have an optimized solution.
It was interesting what you said earlier about you've spoken to the seed companies, for example, and people seem to be quite willing to jump on board. But does that reflect the idea that actually the agricultural industry is still a little bit old school?
Well, largely speaking, yes. So if you look at seed companies, right, we're really looking at not the average. Right. Seed companies are these multi-billion dollar conglomerates with a number of other businesses going on. And it's a very sort of a small group of companies which make the seeds for the world. But if you look at growers, right, let's look at growers. An average grower is not going to be, it's not going to be that feasible for us to go to them and say that, hey, the next time around, don't get your shipment of bees. We'll deploy our drones in your farm. That might not really work out for a variety of reasons. Number one is, from what we've learned, you know, talking to growers, they only care about one thing, margins.
Mm.
And as long as the economics make sense, they'll do it. Otherwise, they really wouldn't care. So for us, you know, if let's say we go to a greenhouse where there are bees available in some country, let's say like Netherlands or the UK or the US, if you go there and say, let's use drones for pollination, they are not going to be that keen on it because although bees are, there are threats, yes, there are a lot of uncertainty surrounding bees as a solution for pollination, but it just makes economic sense. They really work well. They're really cheap.
Mm.
So for me to really replace what's being done right now, I have to achieve economies of scale to get there. That's exactly why we're not going to growers directly and saying, hey, let's use these drones for pollination instead. You'll have greater control on the process, but it would not make economic sense today.
It's also building that base case in that sense.
Yes. So we found this beautiful overlap, you know, where the industry is willing to embrace this technology, where we can iterate as a young startup and get to a point where our solutions are optimal. That's why we're choosing to work with the seed companies, where there is an appetite for that. Whereas for an average grower, unless the economics makes a lot of sense, they are going to be reluctant to even try your technology.
Siddharth, I've got a curious question listening to your story about developing this tech, right? It sounds really advanced. And I was thinking, right now, while you're talking to all these companies and other experts who are helping develop this tech, is there talk on the side that such drones can be used in other industries, maybe medical. Is this a conversation that's on the side?
Sure. So for me, at least, you know, the way this came about was when I learned about pollination as an independent problem by itself. In fact, because we all stay here in Singapore, interestingly, about a year and a half ago, I was reading about indoor vertical farming, you know, which is one of Singapore's strategic areas for development of, or rather growing food locally, right? So when I learned about this industry, what I learned is pollination is going to be a problem to grow a wider variety of crops in indoor farming environments.
Sure.
So at that point, you know, I was just a researcher. I had no plans of starting any companies. In fact, I was all set to go for a PhD in the States, but I decided not to do that eventually. So whatever I've worked on, whatever our team has been working on for this problem has been tailored for pollination.
Okay.
So we're quite a mission-driven startup.
Sure.
Our mission is to enhance productivity in agriculture, and the first problem that we're solving is pollination. So while, yes, you know, this technology can be interesting in other areas, we are quite focused on pollination right
now. One problem at a time.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what happens from here? Because, I mean, in principle, it sounds like an amazing idea. We're certainly very excited about it. But are you keen on raising money? What do you want to do?
Right, so we are a spin-off from NUS. So we went through this accelerator called NUS GRIP, which is for deep tech startups. And we raised our pre-seed fund from there, following which we also got support from Temasek Foundation, because our technology is strategic to growing a wider variety of crops in indoor farming, such as vertical farms. So as such, although today we are not actively fundraising, we do mean to sort of have a relook after our pilots, and then we know exactly how much to raise and what it's going to look like after that. So for now, our focus is on deploying our pilots and learning through them, consolidating our revenue models. Mm. You know, because if you look at agriculture, it's really fragmented, and there is not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution, be it in terms of tech or the business model.
Mm.
So we are doing a pilot with a variety of industries, be it seed companies or even indoor vertical farms or greenhouses. In fact, we're also talking to an oil palm company based in Malaysia for pilots.
Okay. Okay.
So once we go through these pilots, we exactly know, you know, what it's going to look like in terms of economics. And then we'll pick what the industry that we want to work with first, because, you know, given that we are a young startup, we really want to focus and start working on our product market fit. So that is our approach for the coming few months. Deliver and focus on our pilots, and after that consolidate our revenue models and then raise our next round.
But Siddharth, we wouldn't be radio hosts if we didn't put you on the spot just a little bit. Let's say you want to roll out your dream scenario. How much do you think that would cost you?
Okay, so if you look at the scope of the problem, it's really massive. I think it's really subjective to what industry we choose to work with.
Okay.
And at this point, you know, as we're preparing for our pilots, we can't answer that clearly.
He's fudging.
But yeah, I think it's definitely something which is a function of how fast we're able to iterate and what industry we choose to work with. Because let's say if we decide to work with the indoor vertical farming industry, then it's going to be a different set of economics that's going to work out. And the development is going to be slightly different as against if you choose to work with seed companies where the scale is really massive, where we really need to grow fast.
But let's say we're working with the former.
Okay.
You know, you're talking at least a few million, at least.
Yeah. That would be the order of magnitude, yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
I sympathize too, because there's a lot of data that you need to gather still moving forward. Just very quickly to wrap up, Siddharth, there is a demand for agri-tech. You've made this very clear. Is there a supply of people, of talent, to be part of the agri-tech industry? How hard is it to hire?
Oh, yeah. Hiring is definitely one of the biggest challenges that we face so far. But for us, as I said, we are a robotics startup. So for us, we're looking for really curious and driven engineers who want to deploy their skills in this sector. So I would say it's very, again, very subjective to what tech the company is building. I'd say that will govern the difficulty of hiring.
Mm-hmm.
In general, you know, if you look at a company such as ours, which is hiring robotics and AI engineers, it's going to be challenging nevertheless, because you're fighting all these big giants, which can offer salaries twice as much as we can. So talent is absolutely a problem. But on the other hand, what I also have seen is for those who are really curious and driven, it's such an exciting problem to work on. So as such, in terms of supply, there's definitely a dearth there. But if you're able to find those really curious people, then nothing like it.
Yeah, it has to be a passion project, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. Siddharth Janhath, founder and CEO at Polybe, in the studio with us. Siddharth, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you so much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.